Well, that's right. There was a lot of enthusiasm here. So. All right. So we're going to start with election of the officers. And we'll begin with chairman. Are there any nominations for chairman?
Yep. Nominate Dr. Foster.
Second. Any other nominations? Then I will close nominations for chairman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Then I will also ask for nominations for vice chairman. We'll teach her to miss a meeting. Any other nominations for vice chairman? And I will close those nominations. All in favor of Linda Weiss for vice chairman?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion is carried. And then for secretary, I would entertain a motion to renominate Nancy, who has the job for life, I believe. Nancy Reeves, or has had the job for life.
So moved.
Any other nominations? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. And now you also were provided with the 2015 meeting schedule, and I guess we need a motion to approve that. And can I get a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I'm sorry, who motioned that?
I heard a whisper, I thought. So.
Oh, I did that.
Okay. And the second was John.
Okay. Then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All right. All in favor? Then we will go on to our regular meeting. So, first, can I have approval for the minutes of November 10, 2014?
Move approval.
Second.
Second.
Man, this group was real talkative about 4 minutes.
Until now.
Okay. Any corrections, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? All right. So that's done. I know we have a busy agenda today, so I don't have any specific comments, except it has been one crazy infectious disease season. And I'm sure Cindy will have some more to say about that. And any public comments? Sorry, I didn't mean to jump ahead. In that case, why don't we start with the presentations?
Can everybody see okay? My name is Betsy Smith. I work with the Nurse Family Partnership Program.
And I'm Lori Peters. I am with the Partners Program. It used to be called Traditional PNCC.
You'll remember last year I spoke at the beginning of the year about the two programs. We've split into two teams underneath the one comprehensive Kenosha County Comprehensive Home Visitation Team, KCCHVT, for short. So just to give an overview of what we do, our goal is to provide education to the mothers-to-be, to have them have healthy births. In the past, we only had the traditional PNCC, which meant that we worked with the women until 60 days postpartum. So the Nurse Family Partnership has been just this phenomenal change, where we get to work with the women until their babies are due. And Laurie will tell you more about the changes that we're having with the Partners program as we go. And Partners works with the multi-para women, and Nurse Family Partnership works with women first-time moms. Our referral sources come from a variety of areas. WIC is our largest referral source. And I meant to bring in our total number of referrals. I think they were right around 900. I have a visual of it later on here. But we are getting more referrals throughout the community from the OBs. Lori went to the hospitals, talked to the labor and delivery units, and so now instead of just getting high-risk referrals from them, they're referring to us prenatally, which is really an exciting change. Very simple, she made one side of the form be for prenatal and the other side to be for postpartum, and rocket science at its best. Once we get a referral, we try to contact them via the phone. If we get no feedback there, we do follow-up letters. We offer them both our programs within the health department as well as connecting with other resources in the community if it's a better fit. And then we tell them of the other services that the health department has to offer. And sometimes it's so early in the pregnancy, what's the problem, right? No big deal, they're just having a baby in 9 months, everything should be fine. Oftentimes after they're at around 20 weeks, 24 weeks, when things aren't as smooth sailing as they anticipated, they have our information and they recontact us at that point. Our visits can range from an hour to an hour and a half. Ideally, we like to keep it around closer to an hour because there's only so much information you can absorb. But it's always that last minute, I'm just about to go out the door, do you have any more questions when something else appears that they need assistance with? We have two home visitors that in the NFP program that focus on teen mothers, and so a lot of times they're meeting with these girls, women, if you will, at the school campus. Sometimes people are uncomfortable with us coming to their homes, and although it is a home visiting program, we're willing to meet with them anywhere they'd like to meet with us, libraries, restaurants, sometimes rooms at the two colleges here in town. Really, it becomes a very cooperative effort. And our goal is to give them tools to for them to be able to make changes in their life, because we can tell them all the time what it is that we think that they need to do, but both our programs use motivational interviewing, which is the open-ended question technique, to give them guidance versus direction, because we know how well it works to tell somebody to do something, right? With the wrong direction. So this is just a visual of our referrals. Actually, Elizabeth Clay, who's working with the Partners Program, put this information together wonderfully, the four colors being the 4 years. PNCC are women who Medicaid are on Badger Care, and they have four or more risk factors. FRAT, Family Reproductive Health Team, are women who do not have MA but have risk factors, and so we send them a letter telling them about the other services that the Health Division offers. Bundle are women who are on MA but don't have enough risk factors. You need four or more risk factors being Spanish speaking, no prenatal care till the second semester, perhaps smoking, maybe dental issues. Not having an OB is a big one. And then on the right, we just started tracking since 2012 our clients who are eligible for NFP. About 4 years ago, we started tracking the health concerns, and so this is just a different visual on alcohol use, dental issues is a big one. The whole thing, reason why you're concerned about dental or other medical illnesses, infections can cause a baby to come early. And so you want to make sure that you're covering all the bases to avoid preterm labor. Symptoms of depression, they say actually more women have symptoms of depression than gestational diabetes, and yet we scan absolutely everyone for diabetes and not always everyone for their perinatal depression. So that's something that we're really trying to promote in our community also. First Breath Program is a program that's offered through the state where we give women encouragement and incentives to stop smoking. A lot of women can quit during their pregnancy. Now we need to get on to part two, which is help you to stay quit once the baby's born, because of course the baby continues to breathe, and breathing in smoke is not good for anybody's lungs or health and development. Social concerns, a lot of housing issues, and of course living the lifestyles that they have, stress is very high. Ages, interesting to see the trends there, as you read in the paper, I don't know, a few days ago. Teen births in Kenosha County continue to go down, which is a good thing. We'd like to think we're part of that effort. And to see, interestingly enough, we're getting more older moms. We just had a 45-year-old mom have her first baby. Has been up at Children's a little bit. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but had a home visitor with her every step of the way, which was awesome. other things, I guess the thing that I was noticing is that some of our pregnancy intervals are stretching out, which is one of our big things that we're trying to go for. We like to say we give out birth control like water around here. We are more than happy to assist you with finding one of our clinics to get birth control, to have you get that emergency contraception if, you know, in spite of your best efforts, you decided to have some activity. And so these are just the different things, areas that we're tracking to see where is it that our needs and issues are.
Okay, so the partners team, these are clients that are enrolled at Beatrix Care. They have a full number of risk factors during their pregnancy. This is a voluntary program. They can enroll anytime during the pregnancy up until the day they deliver, but we do need to see them prior to delivery. Traditionally, this group would be discharged 60 days postpartum. Unfortunately, that leaves them kind of in a really vulnerable place because now it's not just a mom that's pregnant, it's a mom and a baby, and sometimes we just multiply the problems rather than taking any problems away from her. Our new curriculum will allow us to follow the mom and babe until the baby is 3 years of age, so I think we'll really have an opportunity to impact this group of women and their babies, much like NFP has had. Current status, we have 38 active clients with a FTE of 2 right now. We are going for parents as teachers training at the beginning of February, and hopefully we'll be up and running with that by mid-February. Working to a capacity of 80 non-baby caseloads.
So NFP, as I said before, first-time moms, they meet the criteria of low income as risk becomes low income, and they have to be less than 28 weeks and 6 days pregnant to be able to sign up for our program. As with the partners program, it's voluntary, and we get to work with the babies until they're 2. We started out with 4 home visitors. We added on 2 home visitors last summer that were, 2 years ago, we added on 2 part-time home visitors that worked in the PACE or the parents and teacher at, it's now at Indian Trails Academy High School. And then this fall, we trained 2 more home visitors. So there's 8 of us working in the field, 7 FTEs. We currently have 108 active clients, 81 babies, and we had 3 recent graduates, which meant that we had babies who stayed, moms and babies who stayed with the program until the babies turned 2. We have about 5 more graduating this month, and it'll be 3 to 6 babies graduating a month now, which has been very exciting. We have done quarterly parent education gatherings with them. At the top, some of the pictures of our babies. We like to post our little ones. At the educational gatherings, they typically will do a craft together. We like to do something that marks their stage at that time, something that involves a foot or a handprint. We read stories aloud to them, and mostly they seem to want to just have time to play, have the kids play with each other, and the moms have other moms to talk to. Other events in 2014, we became part of a national collaborative called HB Coin. It's a improvement and innovation network. We have met with people from HRSA and MIT just to help us learn how to use both to use our outcomes to collect data to see what our outcomes are and how we can improve them, and then working through some short-acting plan, do, study, act cycles, otherwise known as PDSAs. We're both working in the area of breastfeeding, and our goal is to develop a consistent, comprehensive curriculum. I'm amazed that anybody decided to breastfeed. But there's just so much information up there how we can, if we could get everyone in the country to breastfeed, we would save between $4 and $13 billion in healthcare costs. It's good for the baby, it's good for the mom. Of course, in order for that to be successful, we have to have families engaged, and so we're also addressing the family engagement and retention piece. Right now we have about, I was just looking at annual numbers from last year. So all the, while we have 108 current clients, we actually had 148 different clients throughout the year. So about a 60% retention rate, if you will. Some of that is that they lose the baby, so of course, then they're not in, or they lose the fetus, so they're not in the program. Sometimes people move, and therefore they fall outside our jurisdiction. Sometimes they just get too busy. Sometimes they get a job and they're just unable to meet with us, which is a good celebration, but we're unable to stay with them because they just can't fit the program into their schedule. It's really exciting when I'm talking with the home visitors and they're talking about how someone who said they'd never go back to school has signed up for Gateway this January. All sorts of changes that they're making in their lives.
And then we had an opportunity to apply for a grant through NACHO, National Association of County and City Health Officials. The grant was to, had a goal of reducing disparities in breastfeeding through peer and professional lactation support. The target population was African American and underserved women and infants. We were awarded the grant, very happy about that. It is a 2-year grant and it will allow us to increase capacity for Optinosha to support breastfeeding in the target population. Some of the activities that we have planned in partnership with WIC, we are looking at opening something called a baby cafe. It's a mom baby support group for breastfeeding moms and babes, and the goal is to have a lactation consultant there. So she comes, maybe her initial goal was to find other moms in the community, but her real problem is that she's struggling with breastfeeding. Now she's got somebody standing right there next to her that can help her tease out what the problem is. Typically this, it meets at least weekly, though the model leaves it open to meet more often. The grant will also allow us to increase capacity at the health department to provide evidence-based breastfeeding support to the home visiting client. And then we'll be working with local hospitals and doctor's offices to provide baby-friendly care to promote support and protect breastfeeding. Bottom line, we want to normalize breastfeeding in Kenosha County. This should be something that most moms consider, and with enough support, most of them should be able to succeed. And as Betsy pointed out, that will result in healthier moms and healthier babies.
A new pilot program that the county has just been chosen to be a part of is called Early Childhood Comprehensive System, and because we love acronyms, this is now ECCS that will be used. And this is a program that's focusing on the whole trauma-informed care. If you're not familiar with the concept, typically when a child was misbehaving, the question was asked, and Dr. Gerlach can tell you all about this, since she's our leader, so I feel like I'm preaching to the choir literally here. You know, how come you're being, you know, it used to be asked, you know, why are you being so bad when a child was misbehaving, and now the question is shifting to, how come you're being bad? I mean, you hear stories of a child who was in his mother's arms when her partner killed her. This is a child who's now going to be afraid of any large male who walks into the room and will run and hide under the table. This child is not being bad. This child is reacting to his past history. And so it's a way of helping people who work with children to look at behaviors and development in a different light, so hopefully getting better outcomes. Did I do okay, Brian? Anything you want to add?
Well, our focus, the pilot is around social emotional development of the ages of 0 to 5 with a focus on trauma-informed care. And the group that's working on it at this point, our biggest goals, I think, would be, one, we have a lot of resources. We just need to form that network to pull everybody together so everybody knows what's going on and we can find our gaps. The other is, you can't recognize abnormal behavior or abnormal development if you don't know normal. So making everyone aware of normal development and then working on recognizing abnormal development, social emotional development, and trauma.
It's really exciting to be part of, I mean, as we've said before, we keep trying to get a comprehensive system and safety net for the children in our community. The NFP and partners team went to a day conference on dealing with vicarious trauma. That's the trauma you get from working with these populations all the time. And so sometimes being closer to their lifestyles than you've ever been before. We had a couple of nurses with whom were talking about safety issues with, one nurse was at a home visit and a fight broke out on the porch. So now we're trying to be more proactive about thinking, how do we help our home visitors to be safe in the environments that we work with? Part of our whole breastfeeding initiative, two of us, me being one of the lucky ones, went to certified lactation counselor training. Lori didn't mention, but part of the NATO grant, we have a woman who has a lot of experience in labor and delivery and breastfeeding, and we're hoping to get her that she can sit at the for the IBCLC test, which Lori will tell me what it is.
National Board Certified Lactation Consultant Test.
So we're really trying to do everything we can to give us certifications and qualifications to making a difference in the community. Fulfilling the Promise is a two-day conference that takes place in the Dells that is the people who are helping us with the ECCS grant are also the ones that help with the conference, and it's all about our care, and hope to be spending probably half a dozen home visitors to them. Services, last year we gave out 87 cribs, we did 260 car seat checks, 211 of those people received seats. Lori fielded 45 high-risk referrals, most of them after the fact, I guess maybe 5% prenatally, which is a good, it's a change. Last year it was zero, the year before it was zero. And we had 26 women enrolled in First Breath, that's the smoking cessation program. Car seat checks, I'm a car seat tech person, and I always like that moment when they're getting that convertible seat from me and I'm talking about how the seatbelt switches, and they just get this deer in the headlight look because they realize that while they had their infancy buckled in, it wasn't secure because it wasn't tight. So spread the word. Even if you have a seat, come to the health department, get it checked. We would love to have more people than we have appointments. We can always create appointment slots. There's so many nuances to car seats. When I was sent to the training, and maybe I said this last year because I'm always amazed, it was a 3.5-day training, and I'm thinking I'm going to be bored out of my mind. And I was paid attention every single moment. I mean, when you start doing the math between how many seats there are, types of seats, and cars there are, and the infants that you put in them, and the kids, you know, it's wrestling with an alligator sometimes, getting seats secure in a car. And I think we need to keep that message out there. It takes effort to get a seat in there securely. It's not just about getting your kid in the seat. So there's my soapbox for the moment. This was a letter that one of our home visitors got spontaneously from her client when she showed up a few months ago. This is a young woman who was 15 when she began the program. I think she's 18 now. It's been an amazing journey with her and her home visitor. And this is why we do what we do. You can see that the writing is still obviously very childlike. But she's on her way to becoming a better mom. And that's the good news of all. So it's random who gets who as a home visitor. I'm sure that any one of the home visitors could have gotten a letter like this. Thank you for being you. The world needs more people like you. Please send it.
Any questions? Diane?
I noticed your rate of moms on drugs was low.
I don't know if it's accurate.
It's self-reported.
This is self-reported.
That's what I figured it was self-reported.
Yeah, it is.
The rates that we have delivering are
much higher.
Much higher.
We have a lot of conversations about drugs. Sometimes, and that data comes off of...
It's initial data, but as they build a relationship, they get more information,
okay.
And they do direct referrals.
Yeah, okay. We have referrals, and we encourage abstinence, and we talk about the fact that if there's any concern, your baby's going to get tested, and if she is positive, now you might be losing this child. Just like smoking cigarettes, smoking marijuana seems to be okay once the baby's actually born, and so we have lots of conversations about that, too. Sadly. It's hard when states are legal to say this really is not good behavior.
And sometimes it's you get better response if you generalize and say this is bad for the baby and not accusing and saying, are you doing this?
Right. The whole motivational interviewing, just like with... domestic violence. If there's some concerns, usually the home visitor will have the card for women and children and say, you know, this is a program that's out in our community, and sometimes women have friends who have a need of services like this. So we just want you to have this information in case you need it. Sadly, there's a lot of stuff out there that's...
Discussing an emergency plan, you know, in general, so that they know, again, that relationship, which is so unique for both of these programs, building, you know, that nurse-patient relationship.
Yeah. So we're very excited.
Is there any thought being given to longer-term outcomes, to tracking endpoints like 5 years out or 10 years out?
That would be fabulous. I guess we should keep our eyes open for yet another grant for doing stuff like that. Because one of the school nurses was saying, because we do dental varnishing, she said, she had worked in Head Start, I believe, and she commented last year. She said, I wonder how many of the kids I'm doing dental varnish on now that I did when I was working with Head Start 6 years ago. And wouldn't it be great if there was some way that I could know, and what were the outcomes of that? So, yeah, it would. So, no. Currently, no current plans, but...
Well, NFP actually does monitor long-term progress and progression. But incorporating our electronic health records, and we'll be able to have long-term data, we will be able to see some of those.
It would be interesting. I mean, I don't know. It'd probably be difficult, and numbers aren't huge, frankly, at this point. But if there was some way to sort of capture the ones that become more oppositional as time goes on and all, and see if it makes a difference. I'm hoping it does. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, because I know that some of our nurses that have been here a long time, I remember that family from, you know, I guess if we had it electronically where we could literally look back at that picture. And I do hope, you know, my greatest hope is that this electronic health record coming in will be able to link not only families, but that long-term kind of improvement data.
One of the with our quarterly meetings, when we do the exit interview, if you will, that's not what we call it with the client, we're getting information from them. What did they like about the program? What was successful for them? And current contacts, because we have told them that we want them to keep coming back for the quarterly gatherings, and so that's kind of our informal anecdotal. We'll be able to see how these women progress. So maybe we should formalize that more and really keep good track of who's coming, and kind of like a general, are they doing well, are they not doing well, are we connecting them, whatever. But that is what we're hoping. We hope that we have so many women coming back that we have to use the commons every time we have our quarterly gatherings. Wouldn't that be fun? We did start the Purple Period of Crying. Thank you very much. So the home visitors have included that in their curriculum. We had supposed to do that last year. So, any other questions? No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then we have the HUD-led hazard reduction grant.
Assessments, which exceeded our goal of 170. We performed lead abatement in 153 homes so far, and that exceeded our goal of 145. To certify workers to work with lead paint, there was a goal of 70, and we've certified 119. And we've also attended 76 outreach events exceeding our goal of 70. Our new grant, which was just signed December 1st, we plan on assessing 275, making 225 homes lead safe, certifying 70 people to work safely with lead, and attend a minimum of 70 outreach education events. Of course, none of that would be possible without our program partners. There's partners like ACL who give us a 60% discount for our dust wipes, our soil samples. They're essentially doing it at cost for us, which is huge. Kenosha Community Development and Inspections gives referrals. They have a neighborhood stabilization program. We actually work with them quite a bit on doing more of a whole home fix. Landmark Title also gives us a discount of 45% on pulling title reports, which is huge. Milwaukee Lead and Asbestos Information Center is the largest training provider in the state, and they helped us train those 119 workers. Racine City Development is similar to Kenosha's. They have a home loan program, they have emergency funds, they have weatherization funds, so we work with them quite a bit. Community Action Agency, as you probably know, is the weatherization group for our area, so we work with them, as well as organizations like Children's Health Alliance. They do a lot of our education and outreach. They even sit as the chair for the Implementation and Oversight Committee for the state. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have 56 program partners, but we're not going to get into all of them. Now that is the mile-high overview of the program, but what the program is really about is the individual families and the individual properties. So we have the Walton family. Yes, you did name them. I did change their name. He said everybody loves the Waltons. So it was a young family, although they already had three children. Their fourth one was on the way. They were excited to be first-time home buyers. They found a foreclosure that they could afford, but what they didn't know is that they bought a home with existing lead orders and property maintenance orders so bad that the city had actually deemed the property uninhabitable. And they planned on moving in immediately and doing the work while they lived there as money became available. And looking at the outside of the home, I really don't blame them. Fenced in backyard, beautiful big front porch, it's sided, it looks like a solid home. But you get into the inside, and the roof had actually been leaking for over a year before they even bought it. And you can see the blackened timbers were so rotten that you could actually take a pen and stick it through there. In addition to structural issues, you've got moisture getting into carpeting and padding, so you're growing mold, there's asthma and allergy triggers, electrical hazards. And it wasn't just the second story, it made its way down to the first story. In one of the rooms, the ceiling had collapsed, the plaster was coming off the walls. One of the rooms, the floor was buckling. And it doesn't even stop there. Unfortunately, the moisture issues continued into the basement, and this was where the city had their biggest concerns. The foundation was actually structurally unsound due to the moisture issues. There was HVAC, electrical, minor plumbing, things like that. So it's what we call a sleeper house. It looks great from the outside, but you never know what you're gonna walk into. So thankfully, this family that at first went, whoa, I'm going to walk away, forget it, I don't want this home, then had all these other programs at their disposal. It was a HUD foreclosure, so HUD was mandated to fix the roof in order to sell the home. And City Development came in and assisted with loans for electrical and HVAC. The family did have to put out for the structural engineer, but the city did come back through and work with that engineer to shore up the foundation. And then after all of that was complete, we were able to go in and do the lead abatement portion of it. There are advantages and disadvantages to every program. The advantages of going through all of these programs is that it was done right. You have a lot of highly educated, highly trained people following up on these contractors, making sure everything was done right and that it's going to last. In addition, had that family moved in and done that work with those children living there, that's four additional closing cases that I think we would have seen. Some disadvantages, though, is it took 16 months from the date they bought it to the date they moved in. That's 16 months where not only are they putting money into this house, doing all this work, but they're now paying for a second house to live at. And they're paying taxes, doing all these other things, and to do it right costs, too. The lead abatement alone, our contractors have extra insurance, extra training, extra time put into containment, extra money for containment. I mean, it is very costly to do it right. But in the end, they ended up with a healthy, safe environment to raise those four children, and hopefully they'll stay there for quite some time. Again, the HVAC system was upgraded. They now have Energy Star windows. You can see wall work was done, so there's no more lead hazards. It doesn't mean the home is perfect. Clearly, there's still cosmetic things to be done. The flooring could be replaced. It could be covered up. But is that really a health hazard? It's not. So that can be done while they're living there as time goes on. And what I really want you to think about is this is one story. This is one out of the 150 we did in this last grant. This is one story of the 250 that we're going to be doing in the next 3 years. And it's just every home has a story and they're all different. They're all unique. Just like every person, every house has a story.
Any questions? Has, yeah? Diane, Dr. Grillex.
How many do you figure are in Kenosha that actually need to be done?
For ones that meet the pre-1978, which is when lead-based paint was banned, you're looking at 17,000. We're guessing about 14,000 of those would meet our income guidelines, which is 80% of area median or below. So a family of two making roughly 40,000 a year would meet our income guidelines. And still seems a lot.
17,000 homes, and how many of those have been done?
Well, we have a joint program between Kenosha and Racine. And of the 36,000 between the two communities, we've done just over 1%.
How many do you think have been done on their own?
Appropriately? Completely? Very, very few. There are a lot of gut rehabs out there, but even more than that, there are people that just replace windows and then there's still plaster walls and older doors and old porches or siding that needs to be done. So I think most homes have had some sort of upgrade that makes them more lead safe, but not many have been 100% abated.
It's amazing what's in some of these old houses. You find out even when you go to tear one down.
Oh yeah, absolutely. What's in the walls and nooks and crannies. I don't think I
want to
know that much.
Is there some, there must be data out there on number of kids in Kenosha County with elevated leads?
Yes.
I mean,
we have the nursing data for that. Because the nurse, they do the testing of the children, and they work with the environmental section on the follow-up on the homes. You know, and if we do find problems, we kick in gear and work with HUD. So there's a nice team effort there working throughout the whole health department.
Is there, is this in the hundreds or thousands or less than 100?
I'd have to ask the nurse that's in charge of that, but Diane usually runs the lead. So it's hundreds. You know, we have probably several hundred kids a year tested. So,
and there's generally between 100 and 200, it's fluctuated over the years, that are above 5, which is considered the reference level for CDC. So it's our new poisoning level. Yeah.
I understand why, but that by the old days it'd be, they used to say the traffic cops in LA had 15s.
Yeah.
Just from
they were aggressive.
The days when you leaded gas. I mean,
And the main reason we do target children as opposed to adults in our program is because an adult, if they become lead poisoned and there's kidney damage, it's not fun, but you can get dialysis, you can take supplements, you can get away from the issue and kind of heal. But once brain damage is done to a child, there's no magic pill you can take. There's nothing. It's permanent.
Maybe one area where our worlds do overlap and we had a little trouble totally sinking before was if we identify workers with elevated leads, and we had some approaching 40s, they could still be taking, and they were, as a matter of fact, they were taking their clothes home, they weren't doing all the things OSHA wanted them to do, and there was still probably, I guess, not as good a communication as I thought there should have been, and I understand confidentiality issues and all that, and at least on our side, the workers were sometimes a bit elusive. You'd think they would just want the help, but they were sort of blowing it off. It's like, this is nothing, doctor.
And it's their personal space. I mean, we are invasive. Yeah. We go into every room in every house for building containments. When we actually do the work, we kick them out of the house because they can't be there. So, it's just, it's not what everybody wants, even though I want them to want it.
What's the new grant amount?
It is 3.9, but 2.4 of it is for lead. The rest of it is for a healthy homes supplement. So we can look at the mold and moisture. We can look at slips, trips, and falls. Do they need a handrail on a stairway? Do they need an exhaust in the bathroom to prevent mold growth? Does their electrical box need updating? Smaller things, but...
When you say you kick them out of the house, but you put them up somewhere,
and you
give them vouchers and things like that, that's out of the fund too.
Correct.
So that's part of the cost of not just the contractor doing the work, but putting them up in a motel or hotel or something like that, giving them vouchers to go to eat and what have you.
Right.
So there's a cost factor in there. What's the average turnaround time on the houses that you, a normal situation?
If you're looking at just the interior construction, it's less than a week.
Okay.
If it's the exterior, it's weather dependent. But if weather wasn't a factor, it's typically less than a month.
Other questions? Thank you. Then Cindy?
A few updates. First, I want to thank our three presenters. They did an awesome job. Thank you very much. Great presentation. Some Division of Health changes that we're going to be seeing. I want to inform everyone that Wayne Kruger, our fiscal manager, has resigned, and that's effective January 30th. He's going to one of our neighboring counties to work. Lori Staves, who is the Department of Human Services CFO, she'll be providing some temporary coverage until a replacement is found. We have a couple of retirements coming up. One is Nancy Reeves, our Board of Health Secretary. She'll be retiring July of 2015. So we'll want to thank her for all of her diligence through the years and appreciate her work. But we have Karen Kirsting, who you've seen before, and she'll be learning the ropes from Nancy. So there will be a smooth transition. The other person is Marilyn Huntoon. She previously had worked in the lab. You may have seen her do some presentations regarding beaches, and she since has been working as a public health tech, and she'll be retiring in June 2015. And then I also would like to introduce to you Tom Reck. He is from Heartland Business Systems, and we hired him as a consultant, as program management coordinator for our project coordinator for our data system transfer. We're going to be closing down what we call as our AS400. We purchased we'll be purchasing another software program to move into a data systems management and electronic health records. And so Tom becomes very highly qualified and is going to assist us with that coordination, working as our advocate as we move forward with that transition. We're very excited, and that's what Gwen was alluding to with being able to have systems that are in separate silos or some that are on paper that we can now actually start correlating some of this information and even have better reports than what we have right now. Just want to share the Well Woman program. The state is going regionally. regionalization, and that's July of this year, and we will be coordinating Kenosha and Walworth and providing that oversight for those two counties. So our coordinator, Pam Kavalauskas, will continue, but she'll have two counties to work with. You may have seen some RFPs looking for some healthcare systems that would write to coordinate the care mammograms and some of the services. Let's see, a communicable disease. I wanted to share with you about influenza, the reports that we've received, just to kind of give you some frame of reference over the last couple of years. In we base our information on calendar year, January to December. So in 2012, we had 34 cases all year. In 2013, we had 57 cases. So 2014, we had 139. So you can see four times as many as 12, twice as many as 13. The drift, the mutation of the virus did have a cause and effect relationship. A lot of people did get sick. Many of you as healthcare providers can attest to that. And if people weren't vaccinated, even though it wasn't specific to this strain, it still provided some level of protection. The health department will continue to advocate for flu vaccines. People can still get vaccine well into March, April to provide protection. That was on influenza A, we still had influenza B that could erupt its ugly head. So we still are looking to keep people healthy. Now, those are strictly hospitalization numbers. We've had one statewide pediatric death. We do not track deaths in our adult deaths in the state. And the health department receives reports of positive influenza lab results. And then you would receive then the hospitalizations. That's the information that we receive. This particular individual that made notice in the newspaper, the 26-year-old, she actually was tested, and the test was negative, so we did not have her in our communicable disease database. The initial test was negative. And so therefore, it did not follow and have a PCR or further testing. So I guess there's some questions in the community. Supervisor Maggiore was saying that, some questions in the community. How did this happen to someone so young, so quickly? Any physicians, any experts in this room, if they want to speak to that? That demise, on that death certificate, it stated myocardial infarction, sepsis, and influenza. That's what is on the death certificate.
I know nothing about the case at all, which, so I'm not speaking with any knowledge at all of any details, but I can tell you in the trenches, even testing waxes and wanes, because if we think we're seeing a lot of it, then we may just empirically use the Tamiflu. I think the practitioners, I don't know what the other folks think, get mixed messages from CDC and other groups about don't use Tamiflu all the time. Oh, maybe you ought to use it, don't use it. And so you end up trying to make an individual decision, and then as you pointed out, the test isn't perfect. And you really should try to capture them in 24 to 48 hours. And even with all of that, sometimes bad things happen. And it makes it hard as a clinician to decide when to pull the trigger. And
and it keeps changing with the extent. I mean, because
well, that's what I mean. That's the mixed messages.
I think the recent message is treat before test results are back, and then you get the whole.
At least last week, when I burrowed again through the CDC site, and last week it looked like they're saying treat, and then as you dig deeper, they're saying treat the high risk groups.
Right.
And it's like, well, what do you want? Do you want us to treat everybody or not? And give us one message, and I understand it's not
right.
that simple.
Right. Yeah.
And then you have to have enough antivirals
available. Right, you have to have it available. And a lot of, sometimes the insurance isn't covering it. And it's not very cheap.
And the last webinar from the state, we can actually access it free from the state. So
if you have not seen that webinar, I can forward it to you.
Okay, yeah, I've seen that.
Okay, let me make sure you get that, because they do have tablets with it.
And with the testing, oh, you get mid-flu season, it looks like it, it smells like it, why bother testing?
Right, and that's what happens, right.
So you don't, you kind of skew your numbers, but...
So this diagnosis on the death certificate was symptomatic, it was symptomatic.
So in this case, even if she received Tamiflu, maybe she even did, I don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know those details.
She still could have had this happen to her.
I don't know any, I know nothing about the case.
Her cousin works for me, so I know a little bit about it just from the family talking, and I think there was more than just the flu going on, from what the family has said. So I think it was a couple things going on at once.
Through our nurse of the day clinic, they've received some extra funds to do outreach for the HPV vaccine. So excited about that. Start getting towards some of the young people to get them vaccinated so that they will never have those viruses that are covered or the cancer that ensues later on in their life. WIC is looking at increasing their hours at the Kenosha County Center, and that not only hours in the day, but looking at potentially even another day. So they're seeing that ability to reach out to the county individuals. Grants, thank you, Betsy and Lori, for talking about the Family Foundation grant and the partners that expanded, expanding that model that with extra awards. Also, the awards of the funding for breastfeeding for us to really focus on that in our community. Those were another two big big kudos for our health department. And let's see, staffing, we're down two public health nurses for programs and one public health tech. That's my report.
On the data conversion that you'll be working on, how long is it going to take? 2 years? Well, we're working on the one for public safety.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be.
We hope not.
2 years, 3 years.
We've already done our review of what software to select. That took a couple of years. As we move through that RFP process, we do need to do negotiations with our purchasing department and the company. But in the meantime, Tom will be going around and starting to collect all the information that he needs to have an understanding as we assure that when we press that go button, that everything gets converted appropriately, we don't lose anything, and that it is all systems go.
What are you doing to target the kids for the HPV vaccine? Where are you doing that?
There were several activities that we included in the grant. From flyers to billboards to actually have a designated person go around to the different pediatric and family planning offices with information. So it included just almost, I think it's 8 specific activities that will be launched at the KIT Symposium, which is April 21st. And I'll have more information on it in our next board meeting.
Thoughts on what might direction.
I just know one of the things that I run into a lot with it is it's just the parents' perception of the purpose of it and things like that, and I think that targeting that aspect of it would be helpful.
Cancer prevention.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because they see it as, well, my 12-year-old isn't going to have sex, and so we don't need that, and are very adamant against it. So I think that is one of the biggest hurdles I see when I talk to parents about it.
That is the media. The theme in which it's going, where it is a cancer prevention vaccine.
What I see for hurdles is parents keep hearing about side effects.
That too.
Yes.
Okay, Corporation Council.
Very, very briefly, I just want to say, and this may have been covered by Cindy at the November meeting, I couldn't be at the November meeting because I couldn't remember why. I didn't get the minutes that I could be here. And I had to look at my calendar, and I was called into a meeting at 11 o'clock that wound up running more than an hour. It was not a meeting I could leave. So I apologize that I wasn't here. But in the mid to late October, I was one of many, many, many people who participated in a health leaders roundtable on questions specifically of Ebola, but more generally of how to deal with a large health crisis. I was very impressed, and you should all know that the health department is not only internally on top of these issues should they come up, but certainly have great connections with the sheriff's department and other community partners in terms of what they would need to do. So,
any other business? Okay, then we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So,
thank you.